I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Listen, all you motherfuckers.
Politics. Politics. Humor, humor, tequila, tequila, and an IQ of under 64. Yeah. You're listening to Art Cop Radio, 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 Radio.
Hello, hello, this is Bart. Welcome to Art Cop Radio Show 91, and boy, we got it all together today. Well, you know that's a lie, but it's the first show ever. We're in the new studio. We got the great white foam is all up in place. We got the super microphone all put together. I'm hoping it sounds real good to you. We're going to do our best on this end to make it sound good. Got a typical show for you in that we don't have any clue what's going on. You know, this is show number 91. I still have no business behind the microphone, but hey, who does? If not me, who? If not now, when? Oh, that's a different speech. Some of you are expecting a sex story in here that you're not going to get. When sending out some thank you mails to some subscribers, I told them that I had been accused of some wild and crazy sex stuff, and I was going to do a full report on it. And we did two run-throughs, and it just wasn't entertaining enough. But I'll give you the bottom line. In 1985, so it's only been 21 years ago, you know, I had the Hard Rock Island. And we got news that Robert Plant was going to be on tour for the first time ever as a solo artist. Matter of fact, this is the first gig outside of some practice gigs he did in England. We were going to go see the first show that he had ever done as a solo artist. So at the Rock Island Club, as the owner, I was the bottom line, but I wasn't going to be in town. So I had to turn my key over to somebody in case there's some kind of problem. You know, a lot of times the alarm goes off in the middle of the night, the police show up, you got to let them in, that kind of thing. Gave my key to my good friend Dennis Clark, also known as Sabotai. Dennis is no longer with us. He left us in 2000, I think. Here now, 21 years later, a person with a fake name has made an accusation on the internets that some bad behavior took place, apparently while I was out of town. The allegation is that Dennis brought a young girl to the club and gave her some drugs and some alcohol and had his way with her. We found out that is probably not true because there was a third person involved. And I talked to the third person. He said, no, that didn't happen. But the girl does sound like she has some issues. And, geez, 21 years ago, I wasn't there. I wasn't a witness to anything. So I'm hardly in a position to comment on it. And I wouldn't, other than they dragged my name into it. I mean, the poor bastard's dead. And if something happened, I can understand a girl wanting some revenge. And if the guy's dead, well, maybe the logical thing to do is to look around and see who nearby is still standing. And I'm sorry I'm still alive. But anyway, they chose to make their accusations public on the internet. We did a couple of run-throughs. I read the letter and kind of responded to it, but there was just no entertainment value to it. So we think we're just going to let that lie. Otherwise, we got a big, big show for you today. As always, got to start off with a shot of Chinoco. That's good stuff. This is the very last of the bottle my good friend Monkey Fister bought me from Memphis. Dude, thanks for that. And don't send another one. I'll get my own. But that's really nice. Nothing tastes better than a shot of Chinoco that someone else paid for. Ooh, cool. Okay, big, big show. Let's get right into it.
This is www.bartcop.com.
I'm also encouraged by the strength of our economy.
Oh, are you? Mr. President, I would say you're easily impressed.
Over the past 2.5 years, the economy has added nearly 5 million new jobs.
But, Monkey, if 4 million people graduate college and 2 million of them get jobs, what the hell are you doing bragging about an employment rate of 50%?
The national unemployment rate is 4.88%.
But that doesn't count the people who tried and tried and tried to get work. And after a year, they gave up. They're no longer looking for work because there are no jobs, and you're bragging about how low unemployment is.
That's lower than the average rate of the 1970s, the 1980s, and the 1990s.
And if it wasn't for the Republican presidents crashing the economy, you wouldn't be able to use the averages of those decades. If you want to impress us, compare your job creation with Clinton's. Go ahead, monkey. Compare those two.
Productivity is strong. Inflation is contained. Household net worth is at an all-time high.
Monkey, it just doesn't work that way. You know, if me and 28 Bart Coppers and Bill Gates walk into a ballroom, the average net worth of everyone in that ballroom is $1 billion apiece. But guess what, George? The 29 of us aren't worth $1 billion, but the average works out pretty good. All you've done is take what was in the Treasury and then steal a bunch more out of Social Security and a bunch more out of Medicare and then give it to the billionaires. So yeah, their net worth went up a little bit. How does that help the vast majority of us?
Real after-tax income is up more than 8% per person since the beginning of 2001.
That's another average. That's the 29 of us and Bill Gates, same thing. How many times are you going to repeat the same false figures and hope that everybody falls for it? We know talk radio will. We know CNN will. We know Fox will. We know the networks will. But the smart people aren't falling for it, George.
Growing economy is a result of the hard work of the American people?
No, George. The super rich did not work hard. They sat there on their big fat asses while you handed them a big check that they didn't earn.
And good policies here in Washington.
Failed policies that stole from the poor and gave to the super rich and that caused a $10 trillion deficit. $10 trillion that our kids and our grandkids are going to have to come up with. And how many billions are you spending per week in Iraq, George? Oh, my God. If you took a fourth of the money you threw away killing 2,500 soldiers in Iraq, we could give all the old people free medicines, free prescription drugs. But no, monkey, you threw that away. You gave it to your friends, the arms dealers.
I believe America prospers when people are allowed to keep more of what they earn so they can make their own decisions about how to spend, save, and invest.
How does it help the average American when you throw the country in a $10 trillion hole? $10 trillion, George. That's how far we're behind because of you. Because of you spending all this money and giving the money to the super rich who aren't working and aren't hiring.
So I'm going to continue to work with Congress to make the tax relief permanent.
You can't be honest. You can't say tax relief for the super rich. Is there anybody listening to this that got a tax break from this cheating monkey? No, there's not. Because I doubt if there's any super rich people listening to this. And if there are, why the hell haven't you contributed something? Some of us are trying here. We could use little contributions if you're super rich. Hello?
Continue to work with Congress to restrain federal spending.
That's code talk. It's code talk for we're $10 trillion in the hole. We can't afford Medicare. We're $10 trillion in the hole. We can't afford food stamps. We're $10 trillion in the hole. We can't afford Medicare. We can't afford infants and children. We can't afford veterans benefits. We can't afford, fuck, we can't pay interest on this debt, George. And we owe $10 trillion. Because you gave it all away, you bastard.
Continue to work with Congress to achieve the goal of cutting the deficit in half by 2009.
I'm sorry, but fuck you. This is all a big shell game. Oh, of course, you're going to hit your target the year you leave office. Sure, that's going to happen. And when it doesn't happen, what are you going to say? Win some, lose some.
We cannot take our growing economy for granted. And so I look forward to working with the Congress to make sure we invest in basic research and promote math and science education.
What about stem cells, George? Would you care to invest in something that would actually cure diseases that are killing millions of Americans? Or should they be praying instead?
I'm going to work with Congress to reduce our dependence on foreign oil.
Again, fuck you. And I'm sorry to be so blunt, but fuck you. Exxon makes $3 billion profit a month, and you're going to try to fix it. What were they making before you got in there, oil man? And how are they doing now that you've been in there 5 years, oil man?
I know as it came to surprise to some of you that I would stand up in front of the Congress and say, we got a problem, we're addicted to oil.
Join the club, monkey. Why didn't you say that back in 2001 when you started giving out $100,000 tax breaks to anybody that owned a gas guzzler? You asshole. You're just lying and nobody will call you on it. Christ, that's frustrating.
And I look forward to working with both Republicans and Democrats to advance an agenda that will make us less dependent on foreign oil, an agenda that includes hybrid cars and advanced ethanol fuels and hydrogen cells.
I'll tell you, the fastest way to get us weaned off foreign oil would be to raise the tax on gasoline. Don't give it to the Exxon sons of bitches. Put it in the general treasury. Oil costs less than $40 a barrel. They're selling it for $65 because they can. We need to drop that back to $40. And those windfall profits that Exxon and the others are making, let's put that in the general treasury. Put that back into Medicare. Put back some of that money you stole.
I'm going to look forward to working with Congress to make sure health care is affordable and available.
Lying monkey. You intentionally let the pharmaceutical companies write the bill that made it illegal to negotiate for cheaper prices. They're selling pills in Canada for $2. They're selling it for $8 here, and they're making a profit in Canada. What do you think to do them with the 400% price increase in America? And you made it illegal to ask, why can't we get the Canadian price that they're making a profit with?
We're going to work with Congress to make sure we meet our commitments to our fellow citizens who are affected by Katrina.
Yeah, George, we've all seen how committed you are to Katrina. You sat there and masturbated for 5 days. 6 months later, what do they have? Hurricane season's on us again. And what do they have, George? They don't even have trailers.
And working together to make sure that the message remains unified and concerted. If you're a non-transparent society, you've got a negotiating advantage over six parties. Because all you have to do is kind of try to find the weakest link in the negotiating team.
George, I'm curious. We all know who we think of when we think about the weakest link. But who do you think is the weakest link?
And so our job is to make sure that this kind of international will remains strong and united so that we can solve this issue diplomatically. Helen.
You're going to be sorry.
Okay. Well, then let me take it back.
I'd like to ask you, Mr. President, your decision to invade Iraq has caused the deaths of thousands of Americans and Iraqis, wounds of Americans and Iraqis for a lifetime. Every reason given, publicly at least, has turned out not to be true. My question is, why did you really want to go to war? Mm-hmm. From the moment you stepped into the White House, yeah. From your cabinet, former cabinet officers, intelligent people, and so forth. Mm-hmm. What was your real reason? You have said it wasn't oil, quest for oil. It hasn't been Israel or anything else. What was it?
Yeah, I think your premise, and all due respect to your question and to you as a lifelong journalist, is that, you know, I didn't want war.
If we had a free press in this country, that entire room would have burst out with laughter. But no. They respectfully hold their tongue and let this bastard lie again and again and again.
To assume I wanted war is just flat wrong, Helen. No, hold on for a second, please. Excuse me. No president wants war. Everything you may have heard is that, but it's just simply not true.
But, Monkey, what we've heard is from Rumsfeld, from Cheney, from Wolfowitz. They all wanted war. You know that Cheney did business with Saddam so he could build up his oil reserves so they could move in and steal it. If you're going to rob a cotton field, you don't go in and pick the cotton. You wait until they pick the cotton, then you go in and rob them. That's what this administration's done. They built up Saddam's oil reserves so they could go in and steal them. And they have. Nobody wants war. You wanted war. You stole that oil. Where's that oil, George?
The oil revenues of that country could bring between $50 and $100 billion over the course of the next 2 or 3 years.
$100 billion in 2 or 3 years, and we're in our fourth year. So, George, where is the $100 billion Wolfowitz said was coming in? Can we just get an answer to that one question?
My attitude about the defense of this country changed on September the 11th.
But, Mr. President, nobody asked you on which date your perception about defending this country changed. That's not the question. The question is, why did you go to war when every reason you gave was false? Can you tell us the real reasons, since all the false reasons have become apparent?
When we got attacked, I vowed then and there to use every asset at my disposal to protect the American people.
And would one of those assets be your relationship with Osama? Please, George, tell us why we haven't been attacked. Is it because they can't figure out a way to get here from Mexico? Is it because Al-Qaeda has no money? Is it because Al-Qaeda has no recruits? Is it because Al-Qaeda has nobody willing to die for the cause? No, George, they're not attacking because they've been told to stand down. Now, why is that? Why did Osama send us a message 3 days before the last election, George? Wonder why he did that. Did you ask him to send a tape, George? Did you call your old friend on the phone or through your backdoor channels and say, we could really use a tape now, Osama? I firmly believe they made a deal with Osama. As long as you don't attack America, we won't come get you. We'll go get somebody else instead. Is that the deal, George? Can you level with us one time?
Our foreign policy changed on that day, Helen. You know, we used to think we were secure because of oceans and...
You know, somebody pointed out the oceans didn't even protect the Native Americans from the English settlers. Why doesn't somebody tell that idiot to quit saying that the oceans no longer protect us? The oceans didn't protect anybody. And they never have, ever. George, you ever heard of Pearl Harbor? Did the ocean protect us that day, George? Huh? Can you give me an answer, huh, George?
But we realized on September 11, 2001, that killers could destroy innocent life.
Wait a minute. Seriously? You were in your late 50s before you figured out that killers could destroy innocent life? Isn't that the definition of a killer, George? Someone who kills others? And just before you turned 60, you figured out that killers can do that? Christ, you can't be that stupid. You just can't be. Even I don't think you're that stupid.
And I'm never going to forget it. And I'm never going to forget the vow I made to the American people that we will do everything in our power to protect our people. Part of that meant to make sure that we didn't allow people to provide safe haven to an enemy. And that's why I went into Iraq.
That's not true. I know it's not true. Bush knows it's not true. Every fucking reporter in that room knows it's not true. Helen Thomas knows it's not true. Bob Dole knows it's not true. And the American people know it's not true. And Helen Thomas is going to try to call him on it. So what does he do? He refuses to let her speak, just like you'd expect from a Nazi. Don't let the other side have a voice. Win with force. Don't play fair. That's how a Nazi wins.
Hold on for a second. Excuse me for a second, please. Excuse me for a second. They did. The Taliban provided safe haven for Al-Qaeda. That's where Al-Qaeda trained and...
Did you hear this old lady fight the bully? She's saying the Taliban wasn't in Iraq, you monkey. And he's going, Helen, stop. Helen, quit, Helen. That's all he can do. All he can do is shut her up. He can't allow someone to tell the truth in his presence because it makes him look bad.
Helen, excuse me. Afghanistan provided safe haven for Al-Qaeda. That's where they trained. That's where they plotted. That's where they planned the attacks that killed thousands of innocent Americans.
So, Mr. President, please explain why you invaded Iraq. Well, I'll tell you why I invaded Afghanistan. Because they housed them there. They trained them there. They gave them a safe haven. That's why I invaded Iraq.
I was hoping to solve this problem diplomatically. That's why I went to the Security Council. That's why it was important to pass 1441, which was unanimously passed. And the world said, disarm, disclose, or face serious consequences. And therefore, we worked with the world. We worked to make sure that Saddam Hussein heard the message of the world. And when he chose to deny inspectors.
Everybody knows that's not true. Everybody in that room knows that's a lie. The inspectors had to leave because the invasion was going to be in a couple of days. Bush said, get out of there now because here we come. And that's when the inspectors leave. He keeps saying all these years later that he refused to allow the inspectors in. That's why we had to invade. Everybody knows that's a lie. But only one person in this room has the balls to say, stop lying. I'm not going to let you get away with it. That's not what happened. And he shuts her up. He shouts her down. He won't let her talk. That's how a Nazi wins an argument. That's how you win an argument on talk radio.
when he chose not to disclose.
Disclose what? He had nothing. You wanted him to stand up in front of the entire Middle East and say, I have no weapons, I'm powerless, I don't have an army, I don't have a navy, I don't have an air force, I've got nothing, I've got no WMDs, I don't have anything? You wanted him to stand up in front of every enemy he's got and declare he was powerless.
Then I had the difficult decision to make to remove him, and we did, and the world is safer for it.
There's nobody that believes the world is safer for it unless you've been listening to Fox News and Rush Limbaugh. If you are unable to form opinions without Rush and Fox News, you might buy the lie that we're safer now than we were. Iraq was not a problem all through the 90s and through the early part of the 2000s. It just wasn't a problem. He was contained. If a plane went up, we shot it down. Now we've got 2,500 dead soldiers and a future with maybe 10 times that. We don't know how bad it's going to be. Our military is tied up in Iraq. We're helpless to do anything about Iran. We're helpless to do anything about North Korea. All three of those, Iraq, North Korea, and Iran, were not a problem when Clinton was president. They'll say, oh, he coddled them, he appeased them. No, he decided not to confront them. You tell a neighbor, I don't like the way you look, I think I better come to your house and kick your ass. Well, yeah, he's liable to go buy a gun. The entire Bush presidency has been nothing but a disaster. It has been a totally bad movie that we don't know how bad the ending's going to be. If only we had a free press in this country. If only we had an opposition party in this country. If only we had some patriots willing to sacrifice for the good of their country, for the good of their children and grandchildren. But no, we don't have that. They're willing to give this idiot monkey anything he wants again and again. And they won't even say, stop that, when he murders and rapes and steals. Letter to the editor. IndyCard's calmness hurt the United States. President Bush might have praised IndyCard's calm in crisis, but I will never forgive the outgoing White House chief of staff for his inappropriate calmness, lack of guts, and failure to use strong words or actions with Bush when the president appeared to freeze up during a key moment of crisis early on September 11, 2001. Card whispered into the president's ear about 9:05 a.m. that horrible morning, telling him that a second plane had crashed into the World Trade Center and saying to him, America is under attack. I wish Card had been more aggressive about getting the president's attention, but Card let our commander-in-chief continue to sit in that classroom for seven more long, crucial minutes as American Airlines Flight 77 continued its hijacked path towards the Pentagon. The plane didn't reach the Pentagon for more than a half an hour, enough time for Bush to have given orders to have shot it down. I am not sorry to see Card go, Richard Seligman, Plainview, New York. Well, yeah, if I had lost a loved one in the Pentagon, I'd be really pissed about that, too. And it's funny, I'm going to play a little bit here from Bill Maher. Dana Rohrabacher, Nazi bastard, was on Bill Maher's show somewhere on April 2nd. And one of Bill Maher's pet peeves is that 7 minutes that Bush sat there like an ass. And every Republican he's had on, I think he's asked about that now, say, oh, no, what Bush did was entirely, absolutely proper. And Bill Maher always says, no, you have to start with he did the right thing and then work backwards to try to justify it. Because when they tell you America's under attack, to sit there for 7 minutes, you just don't do that. I mean, you just don't do that. And there's nothing in the world that justifies it. But it would be so easy to say, yes, that was not the president's finest hour. He was momentarily shaken, and then you lie and say, but later in the day he made up for it. I mean, they won't even, for a second, they won't even admit that he's human. They excuse anything he does, and it's just crazy. And, you know, I'm always whining that the Democrats are the opposite. Oh, as we heard on this Cynthia McKinney thing, Nancy Pelosi was all over. How dare she hit the poor officer? Well, you know, the crazy woman. I mean, no, Nancy, you weren't there. Why don't you shut the hell up till the facts come in? But no, the Democrats are always so quick to blame themselves and give the Republicans a pass. if Bush does something stupid, they always give him the benefit of the doubt. Oh, well, maybe he didn't accidentally, you know, no, he fucking lied is what he did. And the Democrats just go out of their way to coddle the president or coddle any Republican for doing anything. How many times have we heard Nancy Pelosi or Harry Reid just go on and on about Bush's greatness and what a great guy he was and how bad the Democrats are? Poor Howard Dean, he can't say a word without Pelosi and Harry Reid say, oh, he don't speak for me. No, not Howard Dean. He's a crazy man, you know. The Republicans are right. Howard Dean is crazy. That's a fact. I mean, that's how the Democrats stand up for each other. Meanwhile, the Republicans, they stick with their president no matter what. You know, this thing we got now with the saying Bush is in so much trouble, he's going to drag the Republicans down in November. Like a lot of things, I'm not going to believe it until after it happens. Because the Democrats, you know, you just know they're going to screw it up. They're going to try their best to screw it up. They're going to fail to take any kind of advantage of their opportunities. They're just going to sit there. The only way Democrats can win an election is that the Republicans screw up so much. And the average voter thinks, well, we might as well vote for B because we know how bad A is. That's the only chance Democrats have to get elected because they just refuse to try. And it just drives me nuts. But, yes, well, tell you, let me find that Bill Maher thing. We'll play it.
Let me ask about this picture, though, because I have to tell you that this 7 minute thing has stuck in my craw. I have fought the impulse to become Lenny Bruce with the JFK assassination thing, and I could, because I could talk about that every night. There is nothing that makes me madder emotionally than those 7 minutes. And the idea that anybody could defend a president of any party in the nuclear age we are living in, where missiles can reach us in less than an hour. A president being told America is under attack and sitting there for 7 minutes in the age of ICBMs is just astounding. It's, to me, if there is one prerequisite to being president, it is that you don't freeze at the moment you're told the country's under attack.
And judgment.
I mean, and any defending of a president, come on, you're working backwards.
This is Monday morning quarterbacking.
Oh, stop it.
Oh, come on.
You're telling me.
You've never been in command of anything, Bill. Come on.
But if I was, I wouldn't sit there like Forrest Gump.
Sure you wouldn't.
Wait a second. You're telling me.
You're the guy who's going to sometimes under pressure.
Come on, Dana. I know you're too long. You're telling me if Bill Clinton was president and he sat there for 7 minutes after being told America's under attack, you'd defend him?
Listen. It makes no difference whether it's Bill Clinton or George Bush. The fact is,
you're right.
America under attack. He was, I'm sure, perfectly aware that that his staff.
He was aware of nothing.
No.
That's the point.
That his staff. That is the point. That is exactly the point.
He didn't want to get up and say, "Is it a nuclear attack? Are the missiles on the way?
The fact is,
are our fighters scrambled?"
His national security advisor was close at hand. He felt that if it was a major attack, he would be hauled out of there.
Did you hear what he just said?
His national security advisor was close at hand. He felt that if it was a major attack, he would be hauled out of there.
If it was a major attack, how many planes do you need to run into how many skyscrapers before you say, hey, this might be a major attack? And wasn't Condi Rice national security advisor at the time? And so one plane crashes in the World Trade Center. Bush was still in the limousine. He chose to go into that classroom. Then Andy Card comes over and says a second plane has hit the other tower. It's just too stupid to justify. But they do. They always stick with their man no matter what. Democrats always knife their men in the back no matter what. Oh, how did I get on the team of quitters and losers?
Dana, I don't think you would have sat there frozen for 7 minutes.
Yes, I don't think you would have.
In retrospect, you can say that. But you cannot say that you would if somebody
comes
up.
But again, these guys sold the war partly by saying, Tony Blair made a speech and he said, Saddam Hussein could reach us with nuclear missiles, wink, wink.
In 7 minutes.
In 45 minutes.
Right. Mm-hmm.
He said it could reach it. In this age, when missiles can reach us that long, when Andy Card told the president the country's under attack, Bush didn't know any more than that. He didn't know what kind of attack.
That's correct.
So you still can sit there for the seven minutes?
Look, wait a minute. The bottom line is, the first time that plane flew into that building, it was a while before we knew that that wasn't just an accident. So it takes a time for people to analyze what's going on.
Well, this idiot Rohrabacher, as always, is making no damn sense at all. He's saying it takes time to analyze these. Well, you remember, they've got the twin explanations. When the first plane hit the towers, Bush said, damn, that's one bad pilot. And then later he changed that to, when the first plane hit, I knew immediately we were under attack. So, well, hey, moron, then why did you go into the grade school if you knew we were under attack after the first plane? Now, when the second plane hit, this Rohrabacher idiot's trying to sell the idea that, well, it takes time to analyze this. Well, gee, did you think it was a coincidence that two planes hit the two towers inside, what, an hour? I mean, that's not a coincidence. For all they knew, there was going to be a plane hit a major building every 30 minutes for the next 6 hours. You know, as far as they knew, there was going to be a dozen of these, or two dozen. I mean, weren't there 600 planes in the air at the time, something like that? For all we knew, there could have been 100 planes. And the whole time Bush is sitting there, the bottom line, you can't justify it. And when you try to justify it, you have to sit there and just lie like a bastard, which is what all Republicans do. If a Republican would stand up and say, hey, Bush screwed up, have we not all screwed up? You know, see, now that would hold a little bit of credibility, but they just can't do it. Bush is the godsend all of all times, and they continue to tell themselves that again and again. He's the smartest, bravest, wisest ever in the history of mankind, and they just can't get off of that. They know it's false. They know for a fact it's false. The facts say it's false. The idiot sat there for those 7 minutes. He might have sat there for an hour if someone hadn't finally come and got him. And the idea that besides we're under attack, what else did he need? You know, if someone came to him and said, Jenna has been in a car wreck, do you think he would have sat there for 7 minutes and stared at the wall? No, he would have jumped up and said, well, get her on the phone. I want to talk to the doctor. I want to see what's going on. Give me a police report. Someone that was there, get him on the phone. I want to know what the facts are. But no, when the World Trade Centers are burning, he couldn't figure that that was a big enough attack that would warrant his time. And I heard one, you know, over the years, they've given all these dumb shit excuses. One of them was he didn't want to panic the kids. Hey, screw those kids. A fifth grade class can go through a few minutes of panic if the president says, I need to go, America's under attack. Well, yeah, I figure he'd be dumb enough to say that, but all Bush would have had to do is stand up and say, I'm needed, I'm the president, I'm needed somewhere else, and walk out the door. That would have been so easy to do. But no, they can't do that. They just can't go there. They have to say, well, Bush, because he's a wise and strategic leader with that brainiac that he has in his head, he was going over all the options. He was putting them in priority order, you know. Yeah, that's what they try to sell us, but everybody knows it's not true. You know, a little personal disappointment. Before Fahrenheit 9/11, we were told, a reviewer wrote this, not Michael Moore, that we sat there for the whole 7 minutes, that you watch the entire 7 minutes sitting there in your chair at the theater. And I thought, my God, that's going to be powerful. But they didn't. They got maybe a minute and a half of it. And I don't know if Michael did that as a common sense editing thing. Maybe the whole 7 minutes would have just made it a bad movie, or the overkill would have been too much. But the idea that all these years later, and they're still saying that was the right thing to do, anybody who says that is a lying son of a bitch. You tell them I said so. Give my email address. Have them write to me if they think that was the right thing to do. It was so stupid. It's about as stupid as, hey, Bart, your house is on fire, and I'm going to stare at the wall for 7 minutes and try to think, maybe I want to take some action. That's not how it works. But the Republicans can't figure it out because they're lying.
How do you spell badass liberal talk? BCR. Bart Cop Radio.
I ain't happy. I'm feeling glad I got sunshine in a bag. I'm useless, but not for long. The future is coming.